Welcome to Texas Ghost Tales, where we explore the history and paranormal stories from some of the most haunted places in Texas. Welcome back for another episode of Texas Ghost Tale. Thank you, everybody, for checking out Episode 8, Galveston, Part 2. Now, if you've missed our first episode on Galveston, please go check that out. But if you missed it and you don't have time to go back and listen, we're going to do a real quick recap of the history. So Galveston, Texas is located along the Texas coast near Houston, Texas. And it's very haunted, mainly due to a hurricane that destroyed the city in September of 1900, where over 12,000 people were killed. Eventually, a mass grave was dug that encompassed a large part of what is now the downtown area. Some of the places we talked about was the Hotel Galvez, which is haunted by a mourning bride, a nun that is keeping an eye out for the next hurricane, and a supposed haunted painting of Galvez himself. We talked about a Walmart that is haunted by the spirits of children of an orphanage killed in the hurricane in 1900. This week, we're going to continue to talk about some more of the ghost tales of Galveston Island. Definitely go back and check out that first episode because we really got into a lot of the history of Galveston. It's a very rich history, I think it says a lot to why it is so haunted. And that's one of the things that we look at when we go to places. The history is so important to us because it helps to solidify and legitimize these hauntings and these ghost stories. If we can't find, you know, details in the history books that make these hauntings make sense, we start to ask questions. And so this history is so important. Of course, I'm a huge history buff. I love history. And I think it's probably one of the reasons why I got into this discussion. Now, talking about the history of the Texas Gulf Coast, we get to pirates, right? You can't talk about the coast without talking about pirates. And there was one in particular that Texas and Louisiana calls their own, and that is the infamous Jean Lafitte. Infamous pirate based originally in New Orleans, and then later on he was in Galveston. Was a smuggler. He did most of his dealings in Lafitte's blacksmith shop bar. This is actually believed to be the oldest bar in the United States. Of course, that place has its own ghost stories, but we're going to talk about that another time when we do a outside of Texas ghost tales when we go to New Orleans. So we'll do that hopefully maybe this summer. That would be a lot of fun. Of course, we have to go to New Orleans. I'm sure Kate's in for that. What do you think, Kate?
I think yes.
So Jean Lafitte, he plundered all over the Gulf Coast and the Caribbean. He was a thorn in the side of all the authorities. And he would end up in his place in New Orleans and sell and trade all of his things there in New Orleans. Then he fought against the British at the Battle of New Orleans, earning him a pardon from President James Madison. He had been essentially called to action, called to help out with getting the British out in the War of 1912. I'm okay. Click. I'm sorry, I had to pause there. 1912. Why did I say 1912? It's been a long day. Okay, this is called recording a podcast after you've been at work all day teaching middle schoolers. I said 1912. War of 1812. I'm sorry about that, folks. And I thought about editing that out, but I'm pretty sure we have to leave that in because I think all of our fans would appreciate the fact that two middle school teachers came home on a Tuesday night and recorded a podcast. So there you have it. No one's paying us to do this. You're going to get some interesting things from time to time. Anyway, Jean Lafitte fought against the British at the Battle of New Orleans, and he got a pardon from James Madison. He left New Orleans and settled on Galveston Island in 1817. There, he built a two-story house that they named Maison Rouge, the Red House. It was painted red by Lafitte. It had cannons stationed inside and just completely filled with all of their treasure, their spoils of plunder, or as Kate would call it, spoils of war. And it was just their hideout. They would see ships coming in, and they knew to go out and go and take on those ships and take those places. They would capture ships and then go to New Orleans and resell the cargo. And that's what they did. 1821, U.S. Navy caught wind of his operation, and they finally got annoyed by it, and they sent their Navy, they sent ships to confront Lafitte. And he was at, I don't think I can do that on my own. And so he set fire to the house and the village there in Galveston, and they just took off. They said, see ya, bye. He knew a fight that he wasn't going to win in the first place. Now, after Lafitte died, treasure hunters descended on Galveston Island, searching for his remaining treasure. And here's the thing about the treasure. We're going to get about into this later, because there's a whole story about the treasure of Jean Lafitte that is very detailed. I could probably spend an entire episode just on this, but we don't want to do that today, because it gets away from Galveston, and we're focusing on Galveston. Now, these treasure hunters, some of these folks went to the Maison Rouge, or the remains of it, because it was built on and built over a couple times. And they went and they stayed at the site that is the Red House, the Maison Rouge. And one claimed to be choked by Lafitte's ghost. Which one could say, were they close to treasure? Maybe he was protecting something. I don't know. During the Civil War, Union sailors would claim to see a ghost ship named the Pride, which was Lafitte's ship. Throughout the years, sailors have reported the sound of shouting and flapping sails coming from ghost ships all throughout the Gulf around the area of Galveston. And particularly, these sounds of these ghost ships seem to be a bad omen. The last report of Lafitte's ghost ship was right before Hurricane Katrina hit the Gulf Coast in 2004. I don't have that off the top of my head. Now, this house and property passed through many different owners throughout the years, and people built on top of the ruins and destroyed some of it. And so there's only some of the original that remains. And it's a stone structure that's not all of from Lafitte's place, but there is a bit of remains there. Now, it is gated. It's fenced in because people kept showing up searching for treasure. I mean, of course, I mean, hey, if you think there's treasure there, go for it, right? And so the Historical Society, I believe it was the Historical Society in Galveston, fenced it off just to keep people from digging the place up. Now, it is the belief that his treasure lies under the ruins of Maison Rouge. I'm not 100% certain. While there most likely are artifacts there at that site, since they kept a whole lot of things there, I don't believe that's the major site of his treasure. And there are stories up and down from the coast, from South Padre Island all the way up past Galveston, of buried treasure that he spread out amongst his men and buried. And a lot of it is, protected by something. There's one story of buried treasure around Baffin Bay near Port Lavaca, Texas. And when I read this story the first time when I was a kid, it scared me to where I had nightmares the first time I read it. But that's in Port Lavaca, not Galveston, so we're going to have to save that for another episode. Yep. Yeah, there you have it. It's the rare mid-episode cliffhanger. Ultimately, we could spend an entire episode just on the pirate lore of Jean Lafitte. Now, Jean Lafitte has a major role in the history of the Texas coast and Louisiana coast, but he remains infamous. In pop culture, we love to romanticize the pirate, right? It's the rebel. But Jean Lafitte was no Captain Jack Sparrow. He was very much the villain in many stories. The cargo that he was liberating from many of these ships in the Gulf were indeed slaves that he then turned around to sell in New Orleans. Lafitte was known to regularly execute members of his own crew at what is now the Strand in downtown Galveston. And that's actually something we heard from a historian, but I'm trying to find more information on that so that we can talk about that further. There was one such report of an execution that was of a pirate accused of criticizing Lafitte's breath. Here's the thing is, while so many times we've romanticized the pirate lore, Lafitte was no angel, and we're not here to romanticize him. We're just telling the history, the haunted history. So there you have it. Just the first bit of Jean Lafitte. Now, it is an interesting thing. Now, I'm kind of curious, you know, when we were in New Orleans, we heard about the ghost stories there at Lafitte's blacksmith shop. You know, I wonder if Lafitte, you know, splits his time. I wonder if his spirit still splits his time to New Orleans and Galveston. I don't know. It could be an interesting thing to see. I know people have claimed to see his ghost there in New Orleans. I wouldn't mind if I was a ghost. I wouldn't mind haunting New Orleans. That would be an interesting place to be. Anyway, moving on. That is Jean Lafitte. Now, a very intriguing place that we visited while we were on our ghost tour in Galveston was Ashton Villa. Now, this was built as one of the first brick houses in Texas in 1859 by James Morrow Brown. And he was actually he had a factory that made bricks. I apologize, but the term escapes me suddenly. But this place, this house, and if you've ever visited the house, it is an enormous place. It is a grand place with just this huge staircase coming down the middle towards the front door. This was the site of some of the biggest parties and galas in Galveston in the 1800s. During the Civil War, Brown sent his family away as the house became the headquarters for the Confederate Army. Then, on June 19th, 1865, Major General Gordon Granger and 2,000 Union troops arrived on Galveston Island to enforce the Emancipation Proclamation to free all enslaved people. His announcement was made at Ashton Villa, which there's actually a statue of Gordon Granger on the spot that he made the announcement. Of course, now what we know as Juneteenth, that we celebrate every year. After the war, the family returned to the house and continued to host major events throughout the years. Of all of the children of the Brown family, one stood out the most. Rebecca Brown, or Betty, was a free spirit. She was a lifelong bachelorette. She traveled the world. She was regularly seen driving her automobile around Galveston Island smoking cigars. I like her. If I can go back in time, I think she'd be cool to meet. Anyone else would have been shunned by that era of society, but she was adored by the Galveston community. In 1900, when the hurricane hit, the house was one of the few buildings in Galveston to actually survive the hurricane because Betty ordered all the doors and windows open throughout the house. Sadly, in 1920, she passed away from Lou Gehrig's disease. Property passed through various owners and eventually fell into disrepair. The Galveston Islands Historical Society eventually took over the upkeep of Ashton Villa, and over the years, they have really brought it back and restored it to a very beautiful state. Now, when that happens, paranormal activity tends to kick up. And Ashton Villa is probably one of the most active spots in that area, which is saying something in Galveston because there's a lot of really active spots. Betty's spirit is still said to reside at Ashton Villa. When the house was open for tours, there were many reports of apparitions believed to be Betty and her sister Tilly still greeting their guests. On tours, there would be reports of furniture and other items suddenly out of place, even though they had moved them to the right place. Music from the piano would echo through the house, though there was nobody to play the instrument. When the house was open for tours, the tour guide doubled also as the caretaker of the property, and they would live in the carriage house on the property next door. First caretaker worked there for around 50 years, what we're told, and it seems that Betty was particularly fond of him. When he would check the house at night to make sure it was clear, he would regularly see her spirit standing at the top of the stairs looking down at him, and she seemed to be at peace with his care of her house. However, when he retired, she did not seem to like the subsequent caretakers. Several people took over the job and only lasted a week at the most. One of those guides told the story that when he went in to lock up, her spirit charged at him at the door, screaming to get out. Now the house is closed to the public. You can't go and take tours anymore, but can be rented for events. I wonder if Betty Brown ever joins those parties that are now held at her house. I think that would be very interesting. I wonder if, you know, if the party atmosphere calms her or she feels that there's an intruder. I don't know. I think it's definitely something worth investigating further. Now this next place is probably one of the freakiest places I've ever visited in my experience as a paranormal investigator, a paranormal historian, whatever labels I want to put on myself here, but this hands down is one of the creepiest places I've ever visited. This is the Smith Perry House there in Galveston Island. Now, the Smith Perry boarding house was built in 1912 by George C. Smith. Smith and his wife ran the boarding house until 1915, and it was bought by Jessie Perry. She ran the house as Perry's Place Boarding House for many years. It was eventually left abandoned. Now, it would make sense that this place was haunted. It was a boarding house. It had guests who died and never left. Between sailors coming in and out from port, they would come in, stay at the boarding house, and then leave, and then some never left. On top of that, this house was built over the mass grave of those who died during the hurricane of 1900. There are many reports of footsteps and disembodied voices that have been reported over the years, but some of the scariest stories come from its early days. Stories of demonic and satanic activity have been reported throughout its entire history. One story from its early days was of a child being thrown from a third floor window by his own mother, who was supposedly possessed by something evil. Another story that I came across was a man jumping from the same window after being chased by something that terrified him. From all reports, people were okay afterwards. Now, here's the thing, and I always want to make this clear. I try to do as much historical research into some of these things as I possibly can. These are two stories that I have yet to substantiate, but I've heard them from multiple sources and multiple people. I would like to get into the old records of the house and the old news stories to see if we can substantiate these claims. Now, since the events happened so early in its history, it's unlikely that we will ever have a full understanding as to what happened to those people. What we do know is events that have happened since then. Since the house has been abandoned, it has been a place known for satanic activity and rituals. Police have reported finding dead animals used as sacrifice and pentagrams drawn on the wall. I believe that this created a portal for entities that are malevolent. For me, as a paranormal investigator, this is where I draw the line. It is not a realm that I have any interest in messing with. And with that, we get to everybody's favorite time of the podcast, Kate's Nope Factor. Now, this is when we discuss whether or not Kate is interested in investigating the places that we are talking about. Now, first, we have Maison Rouge, or what is left of Jean Lafitte's house. If we have access to visit after dark to search for Jean Lafitte's treasure, we got to get rich. We're teachers. We need the money. if it is even there. What do you think?
So we've driven past it before, and it had major heebie-jeebie vibes about it. So I would say probably not, but it's outside, so if I needed to run away really fast, I probably could.
Run away and jump into Galveston Bay. Yeah. Just go for a swim. He has a ghost ship, so. All right, so she's a nope on that. All right, next up we have Ashton Villa. All right, for this we have two options, all right? The midnight check to see if Betty Brown is keeping watch. If she likes us, she'll leave us alone. If she doesn't, she charges at us, screaming at us to get out.
If it was going to be a friendly situation, I could say most likely yes, especially if lights are on. If there's a charging and screaming at me factor to it, I would probably run away screaming. So.
Or we go for a party, maybe a black tie event where Betty may join the party as well. What do you think?
I would say yes, because that involves snacks.
Oh, there you go. Always about the snacks, right?
Yes.
Kate is in for snacks. We could go to like the most crazy, insane, haunted, insane asylum. And if I said, but there's snacks, she'd be like, okay.
No.
Oh, man. All right. Finally, Smith Perry Boarding House. I don't think I need to describe this one.
We've been outside of it, and it was, you could feel just the energy coming off of it. I would not want to stay there, even if they made it all pretty with their boarding house, with their.
So that's a big, giant nope.
Yes, that's a huge nope.
Yeah, me too. This one is a rare nope for me. And when we were there on the ghost tour, we got some really interesting activity on our ovulus. Though, due to most likely human error, I lost all the audio from that. And I think I'm figuring out why I did. But I was getting responses on our ovulus that were responses to what the tour guide was saying about the house. So the guide was talking about what happened at the window, the third floor window, and we got the word window that came across. And then later he was talking about remains being buried on the property from another story that we'll talk about at a future time. And we got the word buried. That I do have on audio. If you ever want to check it out, we'll post it to the Facebook page sometime. And while we were there, we were given permission to explore the property because this was before it was sold. So it was still it was still abandoned. We were given permission to explore the property without going inside. And I got the oddest, weirdest sensation when we were there. I felt like something was trying to lure me to the house. And whatever it was not good. And Kate came to try to pull me away from the property. And I felt like I was rooted to the spot that I was on. It was the most uneasy feeling that I've ever felt. And I've been in plenty of haunted places trying to communicate with ghosts, trying to communicate with spirits. And it was whatever was in there trying to draw me in did not have good intentions. And it was not good. So I don't know if I can ever go back there. I don't know that I could even go in there. What do you think, Kate?
I say that is a big no-no.
And here's my thing about, and as an investigator, now we watch all these great shows and there's all the good ghost hunting shows, Ghost Adventures, that I think is our favorite, and a lot of fun. And those guys do a fantastic job representing, you know, paranormal investigations and things like that. And they show the good and the bad. But those guys get into some things that no one's paying me. I'm not getting a check. I don't have a show on the Discovery Channel, and I don't want a show on the Discovery Channel. I do this out of my pure curiosity, to answer the question, what is next? What is beyond all of this? It's going to be interesting. It's interesting enough, you know, and Kate alluded to this, someone one of the shows from one of these network TV shows, one of the home restoration shows, have bought the house and they're in the process of restoring it to turn to into a B&B. We actually, last time we were in Galveston, we wanted to drive back by the property during the day to see if we can kind of get some of the same things around the property. And it was all fenced off and workers were inside and they were working and they were cleaning it up. While I'm intrigued, it would take quite a bit of convincing for me to enter that house. And I don't think I'll ever do it. I just don't think I can. I think it's amazing. I think it's, for me, it's a major, and I'm not telling y'all what to do, but for me, it's a major safety hazard. If you have something, if you have a malevolent spirit that may or may not be demonic, I highly recommend don't mess with that. And I'm not going to. So that's your PSA from me, John, of Texas Ghost Tales. Don't mess with demons. I'm not going to. All right. Just in case you needed that. So there you have it, y'all. Galveston Part 2. I just want to thank you again for listening. Next time on Texas Ghost Tales, we're going to go check out beautiful New Braunfels, Texas. We are, however, not done with Galveston just yet. We will head back there for some more research, and we'll have some future episodes from Galveston and the Texas coast. As always, please check out our Facebook page and give us a like. Just search Texas Ghost Tales Podcast. Also, be sure to give us a 5-star rating on the podcast platform you are listening to. That helps us reach more people. Thank you again for listening. Until next time, we love you all. Have a wonderful rest of your week. Bye. This has been Texas Ghost Tales. Thank you for joining me. If you enjoyed our podcast, please click subscribe. If you have some Texas ghost stories of your own or places you would like us to visit, please contact us. Thank you again. Till next time.